Okay.
Thank you. Well, go ahead and call this session to order. This is a discussion session on professional technical salaries. Dr. Rendell?
Thank you, Chairman McCain. I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Fritz, and he's going to walk us through some comparisons of job types and salary structures for our professional technical employees. Dr. Fritz?
Thank you. Dr. Rendell, Chairman McCain, members of the board, today we are presenting to you information regarding a proposed salary structure for our professional technical employees. Before the meeting began, you heard we also have a consultant on the telephone by the name of Dale Moyer. He's with a company called Incentivate, who's been helping the Human Resources Department with the salary analysis. I'll invite him to be involved in the presentation later on, but I'll go ahead and do the introduction. So today we wanted to just remind you who the professional technical employees are. It's a vast and varied group within the school district. A little bit about the salary history with this particular group. The analysis that we have recently completed, we still have a few finishing touches to put on it, but we're close on this, which Dale will speak about. A recommended salary structure as we move forward, and then also a brief introduction to fiscal implications. As I said, the professional technical group is quite broad in its composition. It's comprised of 129 employees. I'm not going to read them all to you. I know you can read this, but you can see there's examples in the information technology area, student support, human resources, transportation, finance, physical plant, and then there also is some general school-based support. The issue is being addressed as part of actually Dr. Adams' superintendent goals for the previous year. One of the goals that was put forth was to analyze the non-represented employees and their salaries. As you remember, last spring we did discuss school-based administrative personnel, and now we're discussing the professional technical personnel. We began this process last year, and this is coming to a conclusion at this point in time, which is why we're meeting with you. It was part of her goals, and then was reiterated by the school board on the goals that were recently approved on September 10th. So this has been an ongoing set of goals for the superintendent. As you're aware, some of the salaries for the members of this group have been frozen over time, and some of them have become uncompetitive with the market. We have discussed before, and there's actually a graphic that we'll look at before that you've actually seen before, that speaks to the leapfrogging effect for the employees in this group. And there's also some anecdotal evidence that salaries are not competitive with the market. We have actually posted certain positions and not been able to find adequate candidates, we believe partially because the wages have become uncompetitive. A little bit of the history of this group. They previously had been on a step schedule for placement. The salaries were reduced several years back by 7.46% and continue to be frozen at that level, actually from the 2008-09 school year. If you remember, our bargaining groups at that point in time, because of their right to negotiations, were continuing to see some salary increases, while this group was frozen at that point in time. Eventually, you can see at the bottom bullet, they did receive raises in 2014 and then again in 2015 of 2.75% and 2%. The leapfrogging effect, which I'll show you a graphic in a moment, the new employees have been placed based on their experience, while the previous existing employees were frozen where they were, so people who were coming into the district were getting ahead of the people who were our longer-term employees. This is a graphic that you have seen before when we talked about the principals and assistant principals. It shows the history of these groups with regards to freezing, taking away days, salary cuts, etc. This graphic shows the leapfrogging effect. So if somebody had been with the district for 7 years, they would have remained at the 84,000 level. A new employee who came with 7 years experience outside the district, so they had been moving at the same rate, they would have been placed at the $93,000 level. Thus, the employee who's been with us for a long period of time, who's been presumably loyal to the district and working hard for us, didn't see those increases, and so there's a feeling of unfairness with this. So with the analysis that we've recently completed, we did reach out to some consultants that had actually a broader database and also broader expertise in this area than we did. And the company's name was Incentivate, and they have done the salary analysis and sort of a check and balance with us as we have gone through to prepare this. And so at this point, I'd like to hand it over to Dale Moyer, who can speak to the process that was used to look at the salaries. So, Dale, I'll hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having me on your call. I've been looking forward to having the opportunity to share with you some of the work that we've done with Bill and on behalf of your district. At the beginning, what we started with, and I'll just kind of walk you through some of our steps, is really to step back and sort of acknowledge that there are some of the structural difficulties with the salary structure that we have in place, and then Bill had outlined, you know, some of the leapfrogging. Then our challenge is really then to look at this and to ascertain to what degree the district was paying these positions relative to market. So our first approach was really to begin to go in and to evaluate each of the jobs. We began doing that by looking carefully at each of the job descriptions to understand the role, the scope of the responsibility, reporting relationships, really get a good handle on the type of jobs we're looking at within the professional and technical realm. As Bill mentioned in reference, we use a large proprietary national database tool to do the research into positions. And so what we do is we put careful screen on the data to make sure that we're looking at data that is relevant to your district, both geographically, in industry, and within size. So specifically, we're looking geographically in the Mid-Florida region for organizations of between 1 and 3,000 employees. Within the non-for-profit sector. So a lot of the comparison to the database is constructed with non-for-profit hospitals and schools. So those are the best sort of cut of data to be doing these comparisons. And then briefly what we did is we evaluated jobs based on job content. So we're looking at jobs in the database based on the roles that they're doing. It is not merely a match by job title. Once we made a match, then we were comparing it, both looking at the 25th, the median, and 75th percentiles. So we get a range of pay for each of the positions. And then we made the comparisons in pay for each of the roles in the professional technical realms. And it matches to most of those approximately 60 positions, 60 roles, I should say. From there, then, working closely with Bill and his department was to construct salary ranges, which is a little bit of a departure from what you have right now with this group. So moving off of the stepping grade and moving towards a model based on salary ranges has a number of benefits to it. So the first is that we've constructed six salary ranges in which we've then clustered or grouped the various positions into sort of rational and sort of meaningful buckets. The positions have some similarities in terms of scope of responsibility, educational background, et cetera. And then we've constructed a salary range for each of them. And the benefit really chiefly of this is that then you have much more of a market-driven plan where you've got the confidence in knowing that the salary range you're assigning them to is competitive against that peer benchmark of positions in your area of the country. It also provides you with some flexibility in terms of, and at the same time, flexibility as well as structure. So it's providing, number one, some flexibility in terms of placement of individuals within the salary range. At the same time, it's providing some structure. If I move on now to slide number 11, you'll see there that we've constructed a salary range there with an entry, experience, and an expert rate. So the top grouping of professional technical individuals is in the salary range A between $74,000 and $89,000, and then with the suggested rules of placement down below, that those folks with 0 to 5 years experience be placed at or near the entry level or the minimum of that salary range. We would expect that individuals with six to 10 years, roughly, those folks who are clearly experts in their job, those folks who are journey level in their responsibilities, would be placed at about the experience level, which would be the midpoint between the entry and expert. And then for those folks who are 11 plus years in position or in a closely related position, a leader in their field of work, as we say, should be placed at the expert level. And so this provides structure as well as the comparisons for the individuals who are in that structure. I've spoken a lot over the two slides. Let me know if you have any questions before we move on.
Dale, if I may, our recommendation is for new employees to the district that nobody be placed at the expert level upon hire, new employees only be hired at the entry level or experience level, because we want to make a determination about whether or not that person is truly a leader in their field and deserving of moving to that expert level in subsequent years. So initial placement would be at one of those two levels for an employee newly hired, so that we could vet them a little bit and see whether or not they really could do the work that is necessary in our district.
Right, and I think that's a wise approach that also helps to maintain a greater sense of fairness and equity to the individuals who are in these salary ranges, knowing that individuals from outside don't naturally get placed right at the next level. So I think that is a best practice that you're considering in implementation.
Can you explain, maybe Mr. Fritz can explain this. At the bottom it says A to F level placement is based on market analysis. Is that a reference to how this rig was developed, or is that a reference to how the determination is going to be made as to where the employee goes on the grid?
Let me jump to the next slide, and then this should help answer your question. The actual positions are assigned to a grade level A through F, depending on the market analysis that Mr. Moyer helped us to work with the market comparison. And so each position is assigned to a grade, and then the employee's placement within that grade would be determined based on their years of experience and skills in the position. So the positions would be placed A through F, and then based on the experience and quality of work of that individual, they'd be placed on the three E levels. So it's sort of a two component grid.
Dale, you have something?
Yeah, I'm familiar with this type of grid and setup. The only thing that I don't see, and I understand that you're not suggesting that anybody comes to us as an expert, but and I think it's probably because we do percentage of salary increases instead of COLAs, but I'm used to having a cap, Dale. On the back end, you have expert. I'm used to having a ceiling, and therefore, because you give somebody start at 21 and work to 75, and they'll keep going, whereas you should, but I think that the inherent problem with that is because we don't do COLAs, we're doing salary increases, so they could go 2, 3, 3, all the way up, and it'll just keep going. So are you suggesting that we have no ceiling on any of these six categories? You know, final top grade.
So an individual at salary level A, okay, if they were placed at A, and there's a couple positions that are, if they were entry level, they would make 74. There's no in between 74 and 81.5. Once they became a experienced person in that field, they would receive 81.5. There's nothing in between. And once they became an expert, they would make 89. There's nothing going beyond that 89. The 89 is the cap on that, unless, of course, the entire salary schedule were adjusted through something like a COLA or a percent increase or something like that.
So
the top salary of anybody in this group would be $89,000 under this proposal.
So to follow up, then somebody starts at 38 and they will not get any increase in salary for 5 years?
Yes, that's the proposed model.
So if there are no negotiated increases.
Correct.
If we don't add
if there were a 2% increase on the overall salary schedule, that $38,000 would go up by, all the numbers on here would go up by 2%.
That still goes up to, maybe it's not a cause for concern, but as I said, so after 11 years and somebody starting at 21 at wherever, 24, and now they're 34, and they're at 89, and they receive 3% every year, 40 or 50 more years, you're going to have somebody in, if you go to the next slide, that category that the public will see, possibly up to 130 or 40. Just doing quick math.
Well, and these are non-bargaining employees.
Correct.
I understand.
These are employees, and so so theoretically, you could say, okay, IRCEA got a 2.5% bump, our other another union got a 2.5% bump, just to be, if the board wanted to, if they just wanted to, say, okay, we'll have our non-bargaining employees get a 2% bump, except for the expert level. You know, have some, I mean, you can always, you have a lot of flexibility, is what I'm saying.
I just think it would be, it, first of all, it's just a shame, and thank you for working on this, but, you know, this is another group without a voice, and it would have been great to do this with the principals and APs all at the same time, because these people don't matter any less than them, but it would have been nice to do it all at the same time so that everybody could see that value, that they don't have a voice, we didn't have to deal with them, they're not a union, and finally we get to them and they deserve it. But I just don't want to start something and then we start to see through time, you know, even if it's, you know, I might be long gone, but the next group of people may have to say, hey, you know, wow, we didn't realize how dangerous that was, we should have a cap. Except for, you know, I don't know what that is, whether it's $10,000 or $20,000 above the 89.75, but you know what I'm saying, I just think that usually there's a cap, but again, there's usually a lot of the raises are not called raises, they're called COLAs. So that's just my input.
Right, but as Dr. Fritz said, the expert level is the cap right now until the board agrees to do anything different.
So there's control over that.
Right.
Yeah, Sean.
Thank you. Very quickly, we're basing a lot of assumptions on these data sets. How do, and I'm concerned that in the slide it says public sector jobs, but what was referenced were hospitals and nonprofits who are often private sector, not public, although they are for the public good. I just wonder how this data set compares with an industry standard as far as internal and external validity of something such as a McLaughlin or... That's really the only one I know, honestly, as far as salaries. As a business consultant, we use McLaughlin a lot to go in and figure out where roles should be. I just wonder how this data set compares with that.
Dale, can you take that one?
Certainly, if I could respond, it's a great question. The data set that we use is called Connexa. It is a, quite frankly, the largest salary tool that is available today. It is most recently purchased by IBM. So it has gone through several cycles of maturation and become a larger and larger survey tool. Its value also is in that its business model, that it pulls in the sort of result of a lot of other published surveys. One thing you mentioned, which is McLaughlin, Kay Consultants, Mercer, Towers Watson, these are all the large big human resources, compensation consultancies that conduct very large surveys. And so they actually serve as an aggregator of that data in addition to other surveys that they may conduct. And so it's really become sort of the model for surveys today in the compensation consulting arena. And so but I think also to address your point is that they're drawing from a very large data set. They are capturing a lot of non-for-profit, a lot of school districts, governmental municipality type organizations that are represented in that data cut, and arguably that would be the closest data cut that you can get. They don't unfortunately have just a school district sector. They aggregate it together really as a non-for-profit sector.
And for many of the positions, you saw how varied the positions are. We're not only in competition with school districts for those types of employees, we're in competition with even private industry in some cases, although we didn't do a comparison with them. So we're trying to look at the market, but also looking at the public sector primarily. We recognize the public sector generally pays less than the private sector, so we're trying to find a sort of a balance between being able to attract and retain employees, but not break the bank.
Anyone else right now? We want to move on?
The next slide is primarily for demonstration purposes. As you can see, the positions based on the market analysis are being assigned to grades. Some of these will probably still need some adjustment before we reach finality. I have some more positions to look at with Mr. Moyer before we reach a final recommendation for the board. But this is close, and I think for demonstration purposes, you can see that the positions would be assigned to a grade, and then the individual would be assigned to one of those three levels depending on their experience and expertise. So our existing employees, upon recommendation and approval by the school board, would be mapped to their new salary schedule. Our existing employees, depending on where they were on that entry, experienced, or expert level, would be mapped to those, and then new employees would be hired at either the entry or experienced levels. These placements would be determined based on recommendations by the Human Resources Department in consultation with the supervisor. If an employee on the current salary schedule would receive a reduction in salary, we would sort of hold them harmless and freeze them until their salaries catch up, commonly called in the HR world red circling, those employees. If an employee would receive an increase in salary, we would implement that retroactively to the start of the 15-16 contract year. The total cost of the proposal, when we ran the analysis and looked at it position by position, is approximately $400,000. We've been working with Mr. Morrison in preparation of the budget to make sure there was a placeholder in the budget that was approved by the board to accommodate for this. So it's something that is within our budget. And that concludes the presentation. I'm glad to address any questions you might have, or Mr. Moyer is glad to address any questions.
This is a clarification question. So we did this for principals and assistant principals and approved it. Right now, we are looking at what we call professional technical. So I am drawing a blank. Where do the remaining district level administrative positions fall that are not here?
Yes.
All of your assistant superintendents and deputy superintendents, where is that? Did I miss it?
No,
somewhere?
That's next. If you recall, the board established a goal this year to continue this work. So we've got the school-based administrators, you know, squared away. We've done that analysis. That was pretty easy because the principal's a principal's a principal. These jobs are complex. The next phase would be to look at district office administrators as well as confidential managerial employees that we've not done this analysis with. So that is our next phase as part of the superintendent goals for this upcoming year. And actually, Mr. Moyer is going to assist us with that as well.
Yeah.
How many red circled employees are?
I don't have the list in front of me. Yeah. I can get that information to you.
10,
Dale,
20.
do you have a good estimate on that? On the ones that where the salary will go down?
I will look at that here as we talk and see if I can give you.
Okay, he's got it in front of me. So.
And if I might just say that I believe in fairness in when you start doing things like this. Usually if people are red circled, they should get the, if this group is getting a 2% like IR, CEA or CWA, that those people are red circled should get the 2% in a bonus, but not affecting their salary. You know what I'm saying? It's a bonus check that doesn't affect its salary.
So the concept,
I don't know what those that financial landscape looks like because you can't tell me how many red circles, but that's usually the fair thing to do.
So Dale can probably give us that number. I've got it in my office, but what the concept you're talking about is actually technically often in the HR world called green circling, not red circling.
Okay.
Red circle means you're frozen where you are, you stay there.
Sure.
Okay. Green circle means you would experience the same raises that everybody else got along the way. So if it was a 2%, they'd still get 2%, that sort of thing, until that incumbent left the position and a new person came in. Because
I was talking about that. I was talking about giving them, it does, if your base salary is, let's say, 62, and it's frozen at 62, you receive, I would call that topped out until everybody caught up, if I would use that language, and that you would not watch others get that yearly.
Yeah.
As again, because we're not calling it cost of living, so they get that fairly as a one lump sum check. I want to say almost like as if they worked overtime,
like a bonus
but it does
or something.
Not affect their salary. that's usually a fair way to do it.
We could look at that.
How you work your magic to
yeah.
do it.
We could look at that concept and figure out what the cost is, and we could analyze that as a team. And
sure, I think we also need to just go ahead and take a look at the total list and make sure, see how many employees we have that fall into that category. There may only be a handful.
We could look at that as an option.
It may not be a lot, but it's enough that, you know, I mean, you don't want to start, because maybe our error in creating leapfrogging and, you know, the system got to the system, now we're going to just go, wow, hey, sorry, you got to play catch up. So that one lump sum bonus check, but doesn't affect your, and that's the only thing I'm not positive on, but I'm pretty sure there's a way to do that, a bonus check that doesn't affect your salary. It might affect your FRS for that year, as like overtime would, but it wouldn't affect your salary. So your salary's frozen, but they get that. Because, again, we're not calling our raises cost of living. And I just think sometimes that's the fair way. But not knowing your numbers, I really would like to know that.
We could look at that concept.
Sure. Speaking of not knowing numbers, looking at slide 12, if I'm understanding this correctly, we haven't already done the mapping.
We actually have. I just wanted to put an asterisk on this because there are still maybe two or three positions that we may need to move up a level or down a level before we reach a final recommendation. Actually, their supervisors, having looked at this, said, I'm wondering about that. And just Mr. Moyer and I haven't had a chance to get back together and make those adjustments. But in the aggregate, the cost differential will not be any different than what we've talked about. In fact, I think some of those will probably move down and some will move up maybe one level. So
you have done a projected cost for this?
And it's about $400,000, yes.
Okay. Anyone else? No, I don't see anything else.
Okay. Dale, do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
Okay. And you can see there's an appendix here with a comprehensive list of the positions. Slide 12 just has some of them that shows the levels. And again, a few of these may go one level up or one level down before we reach a final recommendation to the board, but we're actually quite close on this.
Alright.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Alright. Dr. Rondeau, do you have anything else?
No, just to understand that Dr. Fritz and his staff have been working on this for a while, and it was something that we put on the list of things to get done, and so they're working on it, and the next step would be to finalize all these different numbers and bring it to you for your approval. So that would be the next step.
All right. Well, we appreciate all the work. We appreciate the presentation. Mr. Moyer, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, and I guess with nothing further before us, we'll stand adjourned.
Two minutes early.